Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Last month, on the final night of the Democratic National Convention, 13-year-old Braden Harrington delivered a poignant speech about meeting Joe Biden at a rally in New Hampshire earlier this year. Here's a clip.
About a few months ago, I met him in New Hampshire. He told me that we were members of the same club. We stutter. It was really amazing to hear that someone like me became vice president. He told me about a book of poems by Yeats he would read out loud to practice. He showed me how he marks his addresses to make them easier to say out loud. So I did the same thing today.
Braden's speech made headlines. And while there were clearly political strategies behind the reason for this video, it also immediately raised awareness of stuttering, which affects an estimated 1% of the population. Joining me now is Peter Reitzis. He is a speech-language pathologist, a person who stutters, and a host of the podcast, Stutter Talk. Peter, welcome to All of It.
Thank you so much.
What's been the reaction in the stutter support community to Braden's speech?
The reaction has been emotional pride. We are so proud of Braden. And I want to be quick to say that's not partisan proud. The stuttering community is a wonderful family. We've got people on the left, on the conservative right, in the middle. And we all come together for stuttering. So there's so much pride that stuttering was heard on this international stage, and it was so beautiful to hear Braden actually stutter, because so many people who talk publicly about stuttering don't stutter noticeably. So hats off to Braden.
I'm going to ask you some basic questions. I hope they're not too simplistic, but I think they would help us all understand stuttering better. What do we know about the causes of stuttering?
Well, I talk about it, or a lot of us talk about it, are there are likely many causes of stuttering. Mm-hmm. So it's likely linked to genetics. So a lot of people who stutter have family members who stutter. It reminds me of a man I met in my early 20s who had 8 brothers who stutter. But there are also many people who stutter who don't know of a family member who stutters. The science is pretty clear that the brain activity of people who stutter seems to be different, and that might be tied to language.
Can you describe for us what is going on when someone starts to stutter?
Well, I'll speak about me. So I grew up stuttering, or I like to say I grew up trying not to stutter. So in the intro, you were talking about somebody who's a person of color who passed as white. I'm a person who stutters, and I passed as fluent. I passed as a normal speaker because I tried so hard to hide my stuttering. And when that moment of stuttering happens, it's a feeling of loss of control. So imagine you're driving down the road or riding a bike, and you know how to do it. And the people around you in their cars know how to drive their cars. But for some reason, your car starts to hydroplane. But there's no reason to. There's no snow on the ground. So you know what you're supposed to be doing, but your body, your mouth, your brain isn't responding how you want it to. So it's that feeling of loss of control. It's a real helplessness, a feeling of helplessness.
Can something trigger a stutter?
I would say that a lot of things could trigger a stuttering. So when you're a child and you order food at a restaurant and you get stuck on the word, let's say, for example, spaghetti, well, you remember that. Mm-hmm. And then the next time you have to order food at the restaurant, you feel this great dread, this anticipation that you're going to stutter. So if you transfer that to being in school, imagine being a child who stutters in school. And then you have this dread that pervades your entire life of what happens when you stutter, when you're called on to to speak. So for many of us, there's a lot of anticipation and worry about stuttering.
A stutter can appear with really young children. What are some signs that a stutter is here to stay? And can kids grow out of a stutter?
So most kids do outgrow stuttering. So most children will start to stutter between 2 and 3. And somewhere around 80% of them will outgrow their stuttering without treatment. And some of them can stutter very little and outgrow stuttering. And some of them can be heard to stutter quite a lot, what you might call a severe stutter, and they can outgrow stuttering. One of the signs that it's here to stay is how long you're stuttering. So let's take, for example, a 9-year-old who's been stuttering since they were 2.5. So they're stuttering for more than 6 years. And unfortunately, the research shows that when you've been stuttering for 4 to 5 years, there's much, much less of a chance that you're going to recover or stop stuttering.
My guest is Peter Reitzes. He is a speech-language pathologist and the host and president of the podcast Stutter Talk. You know, you were 23 when you got support for your stuttering for the first time. Before that time, can you describe the emotional impact of stuttering on you and on fellow members of the stuttering community?
Well, for me, I felt all alone with my stuttering. So when I was 22 years old, like most other stutterers, I didn't know anyone who stuttered. I felt totally alone. I was completely ashamed of my stuttering. I thought it was this deeply shameful, terrible thing that I couldn't talk about it because nobody talked about stuttering. So us old guys, I'm 48, when we see Braden stuttering on TV, on YouTube, in all the newspapers, on these videos, it's amazing because we didn't grow up knowing you could say the word stuttering. I mean, at best, stuttering was whispered about. Mm-hmm. So the emotional toll was the frustration and the shame of never saying what I wanted to say when I wanted to say it.
Let's talk about some of the tools for people who stutter. In the clip we played at the beginning, Braden mentions that one of Joe Biden's tools for working on his stutter was to practice reading poems in front of a mirror. Is that a technique that you've heard of? Is that something that you do?
Yes, so for sure. And I would like to lead with my favorite strategy was stuttering more. So for me, I like to stutter more before I stutter less. I have to tell myself it's okay to stutter, like I just showed you there. So for me, it's always starting with stuttering being okay. And then the tool that I believe Joe Biden was talking about, that Braden was talking about, is something that we might call pausing or rate control. So I'll model it now. So think of someone like James Earl Jones. Jones stutters, and he speaks with a lot of pauses between the words. Now, James Earl Jones speaks better than I just did, but if you think of a rabbi or a preacher speaking deliberately with pauses between the words, almost universally, people who stutter will report when you slow your rate, you stutter less. And I think that's what Biden was showing Braden how to do.
I think for many people, when Joe Biden revealed that he had a stutter, or let people know that he had a stutter, I'm not sure many people knew that. I know you know it because you're in the community and you lived in Delaware. What is something in his speech pattern that you would hear or recognize that the average person might not, that lets you know he has a stutter?
So I've heard that he has done some noticeable stuttering recently that I haven't heard. But I'll tell you this, I'm a bit of a political junkie, so I followed the Democratic debates and I listened to them. And what struck me as a person who stutters was that, and this is not a political opinion, this is just in nonpartisan, is that when the smaller the stage got, when Biden was one-on-one with Bernie Sanders, in my personal opinion, he seemed to do his best. And what made me wonder was there a stuttering component there? And what I mean is, when it's only two people talking, there's less of a time expectation. the person who stutters has an easier ability to get into the conversation. You're not competing with so many other voices to be heard. So I wonder if Biden did better one-on-one related to his stuttering. And again, I can't say for any certainty. I'm just wondering. Mm-hmm.
My guest is Peter Reitzes, a speech-language pathologist and host and president of the podcast Stutter Talk. So let's talk about parents. Let's bring parents in here. How do you enlist parents to help their kids with stuttering?
So for preschoolers who stutter, and again, most preschoolers will outgrow their stuttering, I like to require parents to be part of therapy. That means they don't drop off their child at the door. That means they participate in entire sessions. And I show them how to problem solve and how to be the therapist themselves. Now, in public schools, you can't require it, but most of my parents of young children who stutter will come in for those pre-K therapy sessions. For older children, one of the first things I do is I try to connect the family with all the great stuttering support and stuttering resources, because just as us people who stutter are desperate, parents are desperate. So if you think of a 5 or 6 year old child who stutters, this speech might bother them a little bit, but who does it bother the most? It's really the hardest on mom and dad, because the child starts to speak at two or three, or around, you know, they start to put two words together around 2 years of age, and there is no stuttering. So the child starts talking at one, there's no stuttering. And then at 2 or 3 years of age, the stuttering comes, and the parent is left to think, what did I do wrong? So I do try to connect parents with support groups like the National Stuttering Association and Friends, with wonderful camps like Camp Say, so that parents can meet other parents of children who stutter and get better educated about stuttering and to stop blaming themselves, because it's not their fault.
Here in New York City, we're gearing up for the start of the school year, and while some kids will be learning remotely full times, others will be taking part in blended learning. As a speech pathologist, what are the challenges for working with kids remotely?
The challenges are pretty huge. We just started doing that recently here in North Carolina, and getting kids on a schedule and having them show up is huge. But I just had a stuttering at a speech therapy session with a fifth grader who stutters, and he was so happy to see me, and I was so happy to see him. And just having that space where stuttering is okay, it made all the challenges worth it. So I am definitely there for my children who stutter, but it's hard. I mean, just emotionally for us, for children and for adults, it's a hard time to exist during this pandemic.
So, Abhi, I want to ask your opinion and your help on something. Back in April, we had Chef Jose Relat on the talk show. He wrote this beautiful book about the history of tacos and American tacos. And he had a stutter. And, you know, I knew it. And I've never interviewed someone on the radio, especially remotely, who has a stutter. And I wanted to make him feel as comfortable as possible. And I acknowledged to our audience that he speaks with a stutter. We had a very good conversation. And I said, let's take our time. I want to play you a clip. And then on the other side, I want to know what is the best thing to do, someone can do to help, or when they're in a conversation with someone who's stuttering. Let's take a listen to Jose.
So I met my wife there. I am a Puerto Rican, but met this beautiful Mexican woman, and she introduced me to Texas foodways that I had never even imagined or considered.
And, you know, the caretaker in me, Peter, wanted to finish his sentence for him, but at the same time, I wanted to respect his intellect and his skill. What can we do, folks who don't stutter, in conversation with people who do?
Well, I think the best thing to do is what I'm sure you did, which is listen. To give him the space to talk and to do some really deep listening and to value what he's saying and not how he's saying it. And I agree it's best not to complete someone's sentence, when they're stuttering, because again, it adds to that feeling of loss of control. But it's so complicated. I can tell you that I know some people who stutter who would have been happy if you would have completed their sentence for them, because they would like, for lack of a better term, they would like a life raft at that moment because it's so hard. But to be clear, most people who stutter I know would like you to do exactly what you did, which is listen to the content of what they say and then respond.
You know, I know that there is some debate in the stuttering community that some people choose not to work to achieve smoother speech. Why is that, and what do you think of that?
I think it's great to stutter. Stuttering is allowed. Hearing that message changed my life. There's also so much frustration with not being able to say what you want to say. And for me, I had no faith in my ability to get the words out. So I had so much I wanted to say, but I couldn't trust my body to say it. So I am so grateful for some of the speech therapy techniques I learned, which included stuttering openly, which included stuttering less, which included pulling out of a stutter like I just showed you there, or using an easy onset to get through or to begin a sentence. And sometimes the disability rights activists, who I love and adore, they take it a little bit too far. And I think they forget about the tremendous frustration and oppression we feel as people who stutter when we can't say what we want to say. So I'm all for stuttering openly, but I'm also for getting my thoughts out. To me, it was always important to stutter, to be a stutterer, and to say what I want to say.
I've been speaking with Peter Reitzes, a speech-language pathologist and host of the podcast Stutter Talk. Peter, thank you for being with us.
Thank you very much.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.